why don't kick back and get raw with us.
From the latest hip-hop beefs,
spazzles,
to social issues that cripple the black community, all from the perspective of a young, strong black woman.
A strong black woman.
And now your host, Rita.
Welcome back, everyone, for another episode of According to RP on WJMS Radio. It's your girl, Rita Pierre, your host. And as always, I hope you guys are having a wonderful, wonderful week so far. So today we have a very special show. I have a very special guest by the name of Audace Garnett, who will be joining us a little later to talk about a very important topic that is plaguing our community, but yet we fail to address. Sexual assault in the black community. So for those of you who are not aware, April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month. And for the most part, when we think about sexual assault, we think about people getting raped on college campuses. We think about stranger rape. But very rarely do we consider that sexual assault is when Uncle Charlie touched you inappropriately when you were a child. People never want to talk about these things because it's very, very sensitive. It's very, very private. But what we fail to realize as a community is that these kind of traumas, they don't just stay in the past. They don't remain in the past. They follow us. They, you know, we carry them, and we, whether we bury these things or not, like, these things are part of us, and they manifest in so many different ways. Some of us cannot sleep. Some of us, you know, we have very interesting relationships with people. Some of us don't even know how to interact with our own children. So the sexual assault aspect, it's not something that just affects the person who was victimized. I feel like it's something that affects society as a whole. Anybody who comes in contact with this individual who has been victimized is somehow, you know, involved in or is affected in some way, shape, or form. And it's very important for us as a community to talk about these things. It's really disheartening for me to see that the only time where these types of discussions take place is when the media is somehow involved, like R. Kelly and Michael Jackson. You know, all of a sudden people want to talk about it, but they only want to talk about it with a limited lens. So people want to kind of fake talk about it because it's the hot trending topic, but we don't really want to talk about it to get to a resolution. So I have my girl Audace Garnett, who's a licensed social worker and the CEO and founder of Ascension Advocacy, who will talk a little bit about this very important topic. And we're going to talk a little bit about an event that Free to Women NYC will be hosting at the end of the month on April 30th. So definitely keep it locked. Stay tuned to hear details about that. But before we get into the meat of the show, guys, you know it is time for our Urban Dictionary word or phrase of the week.
Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
May I have the definition?
What does skeet skeet mean?
What's on fleek?
Can you use it in a sentence?
Popping on fleek, you're lit.
And it's gonna be lit.
Major key.
It's time for the Urban Dictionary word or phrase of the week.
So this week's Urban Dictionary word of the week is leopard. Leopard, not an urban cougar, but still a single or divorced woman, 35 to 55, intelligent, successful, educated, secure in herself, her looks, and her life. She enjoys the company of men on her terms. She does not seek younger men, older men, or even men her own age. They seek her. These women are far, far classier than the trashy cougar. They do not frequent bars for pickups, hookups, or anything other than a drink and some company with their girlfriends. They do not hide their ages or their attitudes or are impatient with obvious come-ons. Mostly solitary, they are very, very difficult to hunt, hence leopardess. Katharine Hepburn would have been the ultimate urban leopardess. You might call them a MILF if you want to get slapped. What the hell? Okay. As called, the leopardess are quite simply a grown woman. Example, dude, don't. That's no cougar. That's a leopard. She will smack your ass and send you home to mama. Interesting, interesting. So I have never heard any woman referred to as a leopard in my life. I feel like every day there is a new term and a new phrase brewing. I was always familiar with the term cougar, which I guess signified a woman who liked to date old, you know, no, younger men, an older woman who liked to date younger men. Now we have this term leopard, which I will say I like the definition. I like the women empowerment aspect of this particular definition, but I have not heard anybody use the term leopard ever to describe a woman who's, you know, killing it in the game and doing her. I haven't heard it. I don't know. If you guys have heard it, let me know. But I don't know. Is this a term that we're going to start using? Are we going to start calling women leopards and leopardesses? I don't even know. But that is our Urban Dictionary word of the week. So moving quickly along to our big up of the week. Watch it. You feel big up, all of the woman them big up, all of the girl them big up, all of the woman them big up. So this week's big up of the week is David Banner. So in the last week or two, my timeline has been flooded with Nipsey Hussle. Everybody is RIPing Nipsey Hussle. Everybody is quoting Nipsey Hussle. And, you know, it's great, but I say this all the time. I don't understand why the community rallies around these people when they're dead. Nipsey Hussle has been alive and doing these great things, and nobody was quoting him. People didn't even know who he was. People had no clue what Nipsey Hussle was about. What the hell was a Nipsey Hussle? And now everybody is about Nipsey Hussle. And as beautiful as it is, because he deserves the respect, we need to get into the habit of celebrating people when they are alive, which is one reason I have the big up of the week, because I try to do that. You know, I try to mix it up with what's going on in the mainstream and what's going on in the actual, you know, streets of Brooklyn. But I think we need to start figuring out how do we celebrate these people while they're alive, because I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. So this is why this week I'm hyping up David Banner. Now, I've always loved David Banner. David Banner is a rapper now turned activist. I don't know if he's still rapping though. That's one thing I can say. I haven't heard a David Banner song in a while. But David Banner is a rapper who has worked with a lot of celebrities in the past. You know, Chris Brown, Young G, Lil Wayne. So he's, you know, he's a record producer and rapper. And he was killing it at some point. I would like to say 2008 was a really big year for him. But I hadn't heard much from him lately because he's in the streets educating the black people. That's why we're not hearing so much about him in the mainstream, is because he's doing good things. And we always find that whenever somebody's doing great things, we're not hearing about them in the community. It doesn't make sense to me. Like Akon is out here building Wakandas in Africa, and we don't really talk about Akon anymore. Like, since he hasn't really been making music much anymore, we don't talk about him, but he's out here being great. And so the same thing I realize is going on with David Banner, who now that he's this activist who's out here engaging young black people in the community, we're not hearing much about David Banner. So today's big up of the week goes to David Banner. I urge you guys to go do a Google search, learn about this man, learn about the amazing things that he's doing, the uplifting and empowering of communities that he's doing right now. And I think we definitely should highlight him more. We should be quoting him more as he is still alive. We definitely need to show, you know, to give props and to show love to these individuals who are out here in these streets really doing God's work or Allah's work, whoever it is that you reference. But I definitely think that, you know, we should if you don't know about David Banner, definitely, like I said, Google searches for everybody. Wikipedia is out there. And you will learn about all the amazing things that he's doing in the community. He's from, you know, he's from Mississippi. He's from the SIP. I believe he's from Mississippi. But he's doing work, you know, in Louisiana. He's doing work in, yeah, he's from Jackson, Mississippi. He's really out here in these streets working with HBCUs and really empowering young men, young women to do better and to seek better. So big up to you, David Banner, for all the hard work that you're doing in these streets, educating the masses. Now, you guys know with every high, there is a low. And this week's low somehow is connected to Nipsey Hussle. And this week's Womp Womp of the Week goes to the Fox News host, Laura Ingraham. Now, Laura Ingraham is no stranger to this type of controversy because she can't keep her nose out of grown folks' business. And she's always talking about the Black community in a way that's just disrespectful. But again, she is a news host on Fox News. So I guess, why are we shocked, right? But recently, she came under fire from the Black community because she was disrespecting the deceased being Nipsey Hussle, in one of her segments in which she talks about one of the songs that, you know, Nipsey has, FDT, which is F Donald Trump. And she starts making light of the refrain, like the chorus of the actual song. And then she goes on to say, and I quote, so the chorus, it goes on and on. And then she asks, is that related to the lowest unemployment ever, basically for African Americans? Now, I don't understand why this woman, like, first of all, if you weren't about empowering and lifting up the name of Nipsey Hussle, Nipsey's name should have never been in your mouth. You should have never tried to capitalize on Nipsey's death for your lame-ass news segment. But she did. And so because the community, the one thing that we're good at, you know, in times of crisis, in times of disrespect, we rally against, you know, we rally with each other. The rappers of our community, Game and T.I., have taken to Instagram, and now there is actually a petition calling for Fox News to axe Laura Ingraham, to get rid of her ass. And this petition has been going on for several days now. So, you know, it's actually spreading like wildfire. But the rappers have came together and they were like, we're not going to stand for this anymore, Laura Ingraham. Your ass needs to be done. And so I haven't actually come across this petition for me to sign. But if any of you guys come across the petition, definitely share it with me so I can be a part of this. But I think it's time that we take a stand. I mean, there's just certain things you don't do. If you know, I mean, you could be a racist, you could be whatever it is, but you know, you don't mess with the dead. You don't mess with the dead. You don't come for the community in a way like that on national television. I mean, it's just, I don't know, white people, man. I don't know. So Laura Ingraham gets the Womp Womp of the Week. Hey, Audace.
How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, girl. I can't complain. about a thing. Can't complain.
Well, thank you so much for being the guest of this week's episode of According to RP.
Yes, it's always a pleasure. Thank you for having me back.
Yes, definitely. I remember you were actually a guest on According to RP. Was it last year? I think it might have been last year.
Well, yeah,
October, I think it was for Domestic Violence Awareness Week.
Yes. That's exactly when it was. Yep.
All right. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So for those of you who are probably wondering, who is this guest of mine? It's Audace Garnett, the fabulous Audace Garnett, a former colleague of mine from the Brooklyn DA's office.
Yes.
And
yes,
so, yes, Audace and I have kept in contact since, you know, our time there, and we've actually been able to collaborate on a couple of things concerning domestic violence and sexual assault and whatnot. And so, as April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month, each year mm-hmm. I try to hold some sort of event addressing this particular topic in the Black community. And right. I have Audace here, who is a, well, she will tell you all about herself, but she'll give you a little bit of background about who she is, what she does. But today we're actually going to have a conversation on sexual assault and the importance of talking about it in our community. And we're going to highlight an upcoming event that we are going to be holding as well.
Absolutely.
So enough of me talking, Audace. Go ahead.
Thank you so much, Rita. Hello, everyone. Again, my name is Audace Garnett, and I'm the founder of Austension Advocacy and Consulting, LLC. And the purpose of me creating this LLC was to basically inform, educate, and to inspire community members around topics that we don't discuss, such as domestic violence, teen dating violence, sexual assault, and sex trafficking. I also work for a national organization. So let me just say this. Anything that I say throughout this time that I'm on this talk show are my opinion and not affiliated with my employer. But I do train nationally around the intersection of technology and abuse as well. And as Rita mentioned, I worked with her at the Brooklyn DA's office, where I served as the victim service advocate, working directly with survivors who are experiencing these issues. And I've also worked with young people trained around New York City around these topics and issues. I'm a parent to a 6-year-old, so I'm really passionate about these topics.
Yes.
I'm a native New Yorker. So I live in these communities. I live in South Jamaica, Queens. I was raised by, you know, Guyanese parents. I came here when I was 5 years old. So that also influences my passion, because there are a lot of things that, you know, concerning my upbringing that I didn't think were right, that I will not, you know, continue on for generations to come. So that's why I'm really passionate about this. So, that's who I am.
All right. Well, definitely gave us a really good synopsis. I'm like, man, what else does she does? What else does she do?
Yes, girl.
But yeah, so, we've had these conversations offline, you know, for the last couple of years, just talking about how important it is to discuss these types of issues, domestic violence, sexual abuse, these types of topics within our community. Because for whatever reason, well, let me not say for whatever reason, we know the reason, but, you know, that people don't want to really talk about these issues. But it's so important because it affects not just the people who are, you know, the victims or the survivors, but it affects anyone who comes in their path.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
And I think that with this whole surviving R. Kelly, mute R. Kelly, Michael Jackson, surviving, is it Leaving Neverland?
Leaving Neverland,
yes. You know, with all of these recent documentaries that have been coming out, particularly about people of color, I find that so many people, you know, when it comes to talking about R. Kelly and Michael Jackson, people have so much to say on social media. They have so much to say within their little silos, but it just stays there. They leave it there, and the conversation does not continue, and it does not move forward to address, like, the real issues. Like, I mean, I didn't watch the Michael Jackson documentary because I'm like, the man is dead. I knew there was some funny business going on here and there, but I really don't, you know, I just don't want to. He's not here to defend himself. You know what I mean? I don't even really want to go down that path. R. Kelly, on the other hand, is a different animal for me.
It's
definitely a different animal. But I find what's interesting with the R. Kelly story is that, as, you know, people were digging deep into, you know, into his narrative, like what he was putting out there, a couple of things came out that people started to, like, comment on and attack, but then I haven't heard anything else about it. And this was when he came out and said that he was actually abused by his sister. Him and his brother were abused by his sister. And I believe he stated that his mother knew about it, but nothing was done. And so I find that, you know, and some people, I guess, when they were commenting on this particular piece, they did so in a way to kind of mitigate what he's been doing to show that, listen, he too is a victim, and victims sometimes become abusers, and that is a cyclical problem within the community, and so we should not be so quick to crucify R. Kelly.
Right, right.
And so when that part came up, you know, I had to think about that, and I'm like, you know what? I see where people are coming from with that, you know, with that, I guess, that rhetoric, because oftentimes children who have been abused do become abusers because they don't know any better, and you know, this is just the reality for them.
Right, absolutely. But that is something that's real common.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I feel like in terms of it being a mitigating factor for his actions, though, I mean, I don't really know if I would go as far as to say that he's excused now for all of the things that he's doing. I mean, what's your take on all that?
Not at all, not at all. And, you know, I actually went to a conference in West Virginia, and they were speaking about R. Kelly as well as Sandusky, who also, you know, sexually abused a lot of boys. From Penn State. He was a coach from Penn State. And he was sexually abused as well. Mm-hmm. So, yes, studies do say that, you know, people who, you know, sexually abuse or sexually assault, you know, once were victims, but everyone that has been sexually abused is not sexually assault. So we need to be clear about that, you know?
Yeah.
Some people, you know, right the wrong that has happened to them and actually seek help and, you know, are not in denial and walking around thinking that, you know, they can project this power and control over, you know, more people and try to, you know, regain whatever's happening inside of them or whatever's happened to them. They don't try to, you know, project that onto others, you know, because sexual violation, Rita, I think it is the most damaging thing that could happen to a person.
Yeah.
And you know, this is just, you know, from me speaking through experience, I think it's the most damaging thing. It changes the way you see the world. It changes your outlook. And it's a whole nother level of violation. It's awful.
No, I totally agree. I think exactly what you said. It does change your perspective on people, how you interact with people. But I think, sadly enough, it affects how you as an adult, when you grow up, right, and you become an adult and you're on your own and you have, you know, you have your own families. It affects how you are with your own kids. It affects how you are with how you engage with your family members. Mm-hmm. And so I think, and that's why, you know, in the beginning I said that, you know, even if you yourself are not the victim of abuse, like, if you walk in the path of somebody who's been a victim of abuse, you, in a sense, you know, will feel that, in a sense. You know what
Absolutely.
I mean? Like, the repercussions and the impact don't just really... lie within that individual who's been victimized. It can be felt by anyone.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because you may become overprotective of that child that you're raising or that grandchild and probably not knowing what to say or what to do about, you know, protecting them, but, you know, just being really overprotective.
Yeah.
Telling them that they can't spend the night over that loved one's home or they shouldn't be alone with that person, but, you know, not saying why, you know.
Yeah. And I think that causes a lot of confusion, you know, to children. It just, I mean, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, I feel like it causes so much confusion when it's like, why can't I, you know, go to Uncle So-and-so's house? Why can't I spend the night with my cousins at Aunt So-and-so's house? And a lot of times, I mean, as a child who was sheltered in that way as well, too, I was not allowed to have sleepovers. I was not allowed to hang out. And I remember... one of my favorite aunts had moved away. And, you know, when I would go visit that aunt, my mom would be like, if grandma is not going on this trip, you are not allowed to go to this, you know, aunt's house. And then I would ask why. And her response is, I mean, at least she did give me a response. She's like, her husband is in the house and she works at night. And in my mind, though, I'm just like, he's my uncle. Like, what are you talking about?
Right.
So what if you know, she works at night? There's an adult in the house. But it's not until you really sit back, you know, as you get older and you're just like, wow, like the damage that's been done to our grandparents, our parents, ourselves, like it just keeps like. Again, whether you're a child who's been victimized or not, like the fact that your parents probably were or your grandparents probably were, you feel that as a child because your movements are restricted. And then it makes you become a very skeptical, I think, individual growing up. You know?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And so one thing I wanted to, I guess, kind of really touch on is the definition really of sexual assault, because the R. Kelly situation, and I know I'll like kind of like use that as my marker in a sense. The R. Kelly situation definitely highlighted sexual, you know, abuse, childhood sexual abuse. You know, at, in the realm of like, I guess maybe strangers, because a lot of these girls weren't related to R. Kelly. They were just young women who their parents may or may not have proffered to R. Kelly, but in the R. Kelly story, you see there's so many different, like, I guess, themes. Again, him being abused himself as a child, all of these different themes that we don't talk about. But I think taking a step back and first defining what sexual assault is would be helpful, because there are people who believe that sexual assault is not when your uncle touches you.
Right, right. So, again, Rita, thank you for doing this show in honor of Sexual Assault Month. The thing is that Sexual Assault Month, it oftentimes focuses on, let's say, college-age students.
Yeah.
It focuses on stranger rape and things of that nature. You know, the man hiding behind the bush, or someone's going to, you know, come out to get you behind a garbage can or something like that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the definition basically is it refers to, like, any sexual contact or behavior that occurs without explicit consent. So you're not consenting to the sexual act being performed on you. And that could look like anything like fondling, unwanted touching, penetration, forcing someone to perform sexual acts on you, on and on and on. And again, like I mentioned, it's always focused on campus rape and like the frat house party or something like that. Rarely do we ever focus on childhood sexual abuse, which is a topic and issue that often gets overlooked in the community. And in fact, in the Black community, we have a long history of being silent about the abuse that ravages our families. And it's important that we talk about this, because stats say that 67% of reported sexual assault victims are under the age of 18. And 34% are under the age of 12. So, I mean, this is happening, you know, prior to this person becoming 18. So prior to them going to college. Yeah. And I think that these numbers are probably low and they're off, because there are many people that remain silent and never share that violation with an adult. And that's for various reasons. And what I've seen through my work is that it's the fear, it's the shame. And another reason that people stay silent in my work and what I've seen in my community, I've lost count of how many times I've seen parents saying it was a young person's fault. They seduced that person. Yep. They're fast. They're promiscuous. They're sassy. They asked for this to happen. Let me just be clear and say that young people do not have the capacity to consent to any sexual act happening to them. So we need to debunk that myth. Young people cannot be fast. They cannot be sassy. They cannot seduce an older person. So we need to like clear the air with that right now, because I mean, the brain doesn't develop until your mid-20s. So how can you say that this 6-year-old, this 8-year-old, this 10-year-old is fast and sassy and seduce this person or ask for this?
I mean, if anything, they're just mimicking probably what they've been seeing in the home.
Absolutely. 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 And we oftentimes see that. We see other children that are, you know, young, or young people, you know, sexually assaulting someone that's their peer. They've learned that from somewhere. Where did they get that from?
Yeah.
So we have to, you know, look at that. And we need to hold adults accountable. That's the thing. We really need to hold them accountable.
I think that's definitely an important aspect of all of this, because I have seen, I have heard, I have personal experience of that same, you know, mentality from parents saying that, you know, it's your fault. If you weren't, if you weren't here, that would not have happened to you. If you weren't there, and then you're sitting back and you're like, huh, but I was 7. Where is here? Where is there? You know what I mean? It's like they're projecting this adult-like mentality on us, as if we, you know, we have all of our faculties, we have all of our you know, all of this, I don't know, our mind and whatever's like developed. Like we're developed, you know, because I, you know, I am the mother of a 12-year-old boy, and I remember when he was 7, and I'm just like, this kid knows nothing. He's clueless.
Exactly.
And he's 12 now, and I'm still like, you don't get it. So imagine a 7-year-old child, like what, you know, what's exactly, what sass, what fastness does that child have? And I think it's very, you know, concerning, because that's where I think the child, that's where, you know, I guess they could go on, you know, the deep end, right? They grow right. up having their parents say that, listen, this didn't happen to you. You're lying, mm-hmm. or you're the one who caused this. I mean, I've yes. had, you know, friends, you know, throughout the course of my life that I've actually observed, and I've grown up and I've seen them go through these specific situations. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some of them have declared themselves, and I was telling you this offline, one of them was just like, yeah, I'm a hoe.
Right.
You know, anyone right. who breathes her way, she's taken down. Mm-hmm. And it's right. like, you know, for those of us on the outside, we're looking at her like, oh my gosh, like who is, you know, this woman is this, she's that. But right. those who really know her are like, you know what, she really had a hard life. Her parents,
absolutely,
you know, were abusing her, were doing all sorts of stuff. And so this is just how she, I guess, expresses her. This is all she knows is to right. be, I guess, easy.
Absolutely. And when you come into contact with people that are saying things like that, you don't want to say like, what's wrong with you? You want to say, what happened to you? Like,
exactly.
what happened to that person mm-hmm. that would make them say, you know, I'm a hoe, or this is my lifestyle, or mm-hmm. this is, you know, how I want to live. You know, something happened to that person along the way that, you know, turned them into this, you know, this person that's, you know, projecting this lifestyle out here. So I want to just double back a little bit, because you talked about how, you know, the fastness and the sassiness, that is something that's so common. And there was actually a study done, Rita. It was done by Georgetown University, and the study was called Girl Interrupted, the Erasure of Black Girls in Childhood. Mm. And they talked about how Black girls are seen as less innocent than their white counterparts.
Wow.
And how we're adultified and, you know, sexualized, and we're deemed overly aggressive as young as age 5, you know, and you know, seeing a little girl, you know, in a bathing suit saying, oh, she got curves or she got hips, and, you know, just not allowing her to like be who she is. Like
yeah.
that's adultification. Like everything, you know, doesn't have to be sexualized when it comes to children. It's our minds as adults. You know, it's how they sell stuff on TV. Like it's all around us. Everything is sexualized, and the younger, the better, and all of these different things that are thrown at us. But, you know, Black girls are not seen as innocent. Black boys either. Like Tamir Rice, like they said that he looked like a grown man. He was 10 years old, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, these studies are real, and this is how people, you know, perceive Black boys and Black girls. So we really need to, you know, grasp that and carry that and understand that, you know, we deserve innocence too. We deserve childhood. We deserve play. We deserve the ability to grow up and not be violated and victimized, because this is a pipeline.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you start out, you know, being sexually abused, and then what happens?
Yeah.
I mean, we could talk about the impact all day, but, you know.
And it's interesting you say that, you know, the piece about little black boys, little Black girls being sexualized and not seen as innocent, right?
Just right.
As seen mm-hmm. as aggressive and all this other stuff. I think mm-hmm. that's really important because, yeah, that's how the outsiders see us. But I find that many times within our communities, we continue to, like, perpetrate this mess as well, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like, it's one thing mm-hmm. if it was just the white people or the, you know, the non-Black mm-hmm. people saying these things.
Mm-hmm.
But within our own communities, we do the same. Just
yes,
like you
do.
Said, how many times mm-hmm. have we seen a little girl and we're like, oh, she has curves? How many mm-hmm. times have we seen a little boy and we're like, oh, he looked grown, he's too grown? And we end
right.
up projecting this type of behavior onto the children. And as kids, what are they going to do? They're going to, again, mimic what they see. They're going to
mm-hmm.
like fall into what it is that you're pouring onto them.
Absolutely.
And I think that's where the conversation is important. Like,
mm-hmm.
no, you know, you cannot say this little girl has, you know, a big butt, or that she's
right.
filling out already and she's only like 7 years old.
Right.
You know, there needs to be, like, I think a education within the community that starts
yes.
first with just saying there's certain things that you just can and cannot do. You know, certain
right.
things take away the innocence of children, especially
right.
now. In this day and age where kids are not out on the playground anymore playing games, they're
right.
inside, they're on social media, they're, you know, more, they're disconnected, they're, you know,
mm-hmm.
it's, they're not,
mm-hmm.
their innocence is already lost in that sense.
Absolutely. And I also think it's about understanding childhood development.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have to understand where a child is. Like, how many times do we see, or hear of, or maybe it's happening in our own families. Like a young child, maybe the under the age of 10, being told, you know, to do something like watch their brother or sister, or mm-hmm. you know, do something, you know, that's not.
Yeah, like
the age range, you know,
a 10-year-old shouldn't be babysitting his, you know, 3-year-old brother. And again, you know, I understand, you know, times are hard. I'm a single mother, you know, you can't necessarily tell somebody that, listen, you know, if that's their only option to have the 10-year-old that they raise to be an adult.
Right.
Watch absolutely. Their 3-year-old kid. But the problem is because we don't have conversations within our homes, within our communities about do's and don'ts, rights and wrongs. We don't really, when we're having that 10-year-old watch that 3-year-old, we don't even know what they've really been exposed to at this point.
Right.
And so how we can't, it's like you almost can't blame the child for what they end up doing, right? Because it's right. like they're 10 years old, first of all, watching a mm-hmm. 3-year-old, and we don't know what's been going on with them because there's no communication, there's no family time, right. there's no anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, because the structure of our society has totally changed. Like, I always talk about that whenever I'm talking about teen dating violence to adult professionals. I talk about how society has changed. Like, when you were growing up, they probably didn't have ACS.
Yeah, ACS.
They didn't probably have an ACS. It was BCW back then, you know? Look at all these laws that, you know, have been changed, all of these systems that have been put in. The, mass incarceration happened, the crack epidemic, like, you know, fatherless homes, like all of these different things have gone on. And we need to, you know, make sure that we think about those things as well when we think about community structure. Like back in the day, you know, many of us knew our neighbor. Now you don't, you know?
Yeah.
Because people are working longer hours, you know, you're seeing a lot more single parent homes, and the structure of things have changed. We live in New York, Rita. We know how expensive it is here.
Yeah.
Right? So I mean, babysitting people have is to crazy. Work harder. Babysitting is crazy. And there's no community and there's no support. But I'm not saying that, you know, any of this stuff, this sexual assault and sexual abuse is new. Like, this stuff has been happening since our great 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 grandmother.
Yeah.
They didn't have, you know, according to RP, to voice their opinions, you know? Mm-hmm. But, you know, we just have to, you know, create a change and set the stage so that, you know, we break this cycle.
And I totally agree with that. And I think that the conversation, I mean, although it does have to happen within our, you know, it starts with us, right? Our generation. Let's talk about what's going on. Let's heal from what's happened to us, right? But there mm-hmm. has to be, like, another step. Because I think the healing also includes, like, our parents' generations, right?
Yeah,
like, there has to be a conversation with them as well, too. Why is it that you did X, Y, and Z? Why is it that you used to say this, mm-hmm. that, and the third? You know, mm-hmm. a lot of us, you know, it's not until we're adults, we might have overheard at the dinner table that our parents were abused, and we're just like, oh, my God, is that why? My life was so, you know, so under restriction.
Right,
and, you know, and it's like, you know, and it's funny because one of my relatives told me point blank one time, I think when I had found out about a particular incident, they were just like, oh, girl, I'm going to tell you right now, everybody's been abused, okay?
Wow.
Like, that's just what it is. Mm-hmm, that's just mm-hmm. what happens. Like, mm-hmm. you suck it up, you take it, and then that's it. He's like, you know, all of your grandparents were probably abused. All of your great aunties were probably abused. Mm-hmm, and they mm-hmm. say it in such a manner that's kind of like, that's just how it is.
That's how it is. Wow. And not even understanding the impact that it had, you know? Wow.
And it's almost like, how dare you even bring it up? And mm-hmm, that's the part mm-hmm. that I think causes a lot of frustration with our generation. It's like, we want to have a conversation and find out why you did X, Y, and Z. Why did you allow X, Y, and Z?
Right.
And there's just such a breakdown in communication to the point where it's like, if you even dare utter this family secret,
yes,
it's like, you know, you might as well just crawl in a hole and die.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Oh my gosh, I'm right here with you, Rita. Yeah.
But it causes, you know, it's just, but it's mm-hmm. so much, like, there's just so much, and it's not even like at the forefront of your mind when you think about it. It's just when mm-hmm. you sit back and you wonder, why do you move the way you move?
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. And that's when you're like, no, something has to change. Something needs to be addressed, because now that I have children, I can't instill that type of paranoia in them.
Absolutely not. Oh my gosh. You cannot. Because you want them to, you know, be able to enjoy their innocence, their childhood. You want them to be free. You don't want to, you know, restrict them. I mean, I remember my mom saying things like she couldn't, well, she's from the country in Guyana. She wasn't able to go to town because her great grandmother would be like, you're going to look for a man. Mm-hmm. Like, what? No, I'm going to get an education. She wanted to go to college so bad in town, but couldn't go because, you know, they had this, you know, they perceived, you know, young girls as being fast because that's what happened to my grandma. My grandmother had my mother as a teenager. Mm-hmm. So they automatically thought that, oh, that's what's going to happen to her. But that didn't, you know, that wasn't on her mind. She wanted to, you know, excel. She wanted to explore the world. She wanted to, you know, go to school in London. She had all these big dreams, but she was restricted and held back because they had all of these thoughts about, you know, what would happen to her.
Yeah.
You know, instead of what talking about them. It. Building awareness, talking to your kids about sex. I mean, you know, they have to be an appropriate age. Mm-hmm. Talking to your kids about sex is not going to make them want to have sex. It's not. It's just going to make them a lot more aware because when their friend on the playground starts talking about, you know, sex or condoms or whatever conversation they may have learned, you know, from mm-hmm. wherever they learned it from, your child will be equipped and aware and knowledgeable about, you know, sex or, you know, what a vagina is, what a penis is. And, you know, they won't have to get misinformed by their friend. So by them learning about this, it's not going to, you know, make them be like, oh, let me go have sex next week. No, it's just going to make them more knowledgeable and aware about what's going on in the world.
And I think to your point with what you said, too, not for me, I'm seeing it not just with them, you know, being empowered to know, you know, what it is and how they could move forward with it, you know, in the future. But I think just having real conversations with your children about what's like, I remember you actually had pointed this out on one of our last, it was either an event that we might have done or our last show, like what's good touch, mm-hmm. what's bad touch.
Right.
And I remember you had emphasized that point because, again, the parents are so, or guardians or whatever, are so afraid to have conversations, to open up family, you know, family secrets that mm-hmm. they don't even want to talk about what's good touch, what's bad touch. When Uncle Henry puts his hand on your lap as a 7-year-old girl and is inching mm-hmm. up, that's not a good touch.
Right.
You know,
absolutely.
Or mm-hmm. when Uncle Harry wants to give you a kiss on the lips, that's not necessarily appropriate. Like you can
right.
say no. And it's like, I don't know what it is that, you know, the parents will sit back and they'll see these things happen before their eyes. Like there's no reason why little boys should be sitting on grown man's laps.
Right.
If that's not like, you know, your dad or grandpa or something like that, like, you know what I mean? Like, and even
absolutely,
it's one of those things where, again, it's like, it's not to sit there and just keep blaming the parents. Obviously, this is a whole cultural, you know, societal
yes.
issue.
Yes.
But the failure to address even little things like that, like, you know, if somebody as a little girl, if somebody in the church, you know, older elder in the church looks at you a particular way or tells mm-hmm. you to come downstairs, you can say, no, let me get my mom. You know, it's like
right.
we're afraid to even set boundaries or explain what boundaries are to our kids.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there's so many layers to that, Rita, because I don't want to say old school parents, because there's some old school parents that, you know, have this knowledge, but mm-hmm. you know, we don't think that children have, you know, instincts. Like we don't let them trust their instincts. Like children know when something doesn't feel good or when something's wrong, mm-hmm. but we have this whole, you know, children are to be seen and not heard. You're supposed to be compliant with adults, you know, whatever adults say you have to do, but no, you have to, you know, build up that voice inside of that child so that they know that whatever they're feeling uncomfortable, they can trust their instinct and be like, no, this doesn't feel right. You know, I don't want this, you know, giving them the choice to, you know, give a high five or to hug or to, you know, not doing anything at all, you know?
Mm-hmm. It's, yeah, exactly.
It doesn't always have to be, you know, this forced affection. Like it's always about, you know, give me a hug. No, you ask them, can they have a hug? You know, I saw something real crazy the other day on my Facebook feed, and it was this woman saying that babies have the right to tell their parents like when they want their diaper changed. I was like, oh, now we're going too far. But I mean, when that child, you know, is able to speak for themselves, you know, I mean, 4 or 5 years old, like they know what is comfortable, what's uncomfortable. Give them that opportunity to choose what type of affection they want, or if they don't want any affection at all. Like, that's how you teach them how to build boundaries and set up boundaries in relationships, because now you're teaching them that if they're in an abusive relationship, they have to go on with whatever, you know, that person is projecting on them. Mm-hmm. And that's not good. It trickles down to, you know, oh man, this is huge.
It definitely is. And it's interesting you say that, because I think that's where the cultural aspect comes into all this as well too. Like, being Haitian American, right, it's part of our culture to kiss on the cheek. If you mm-hmm. walk into a room and there are 50 people in that room, you have to, as a child, we say salier is like greet. You have mm-hmm. to go and greet every single person, man or woman.
My God.
And kiss them on the cheek. And that is wow. the time where a lot of nasty men take mm-hmm. advantage and try to inch their lips close as they know you're coming in for wow. the kiss. And so, and this was something that even till mm. this day, it's like parents are like, oh, you didn't go kiss everybody in here? Mm-hmm. And it's not until like I got a little older where I was like, oh, I'm going to pick and choose my. Who I say hi
that's
to.
That's right. Right.
And that's my right, because some of these mm-hmm. guys are dirty. But right. again, it's a cultural thing. But it's like, as a child, if I were to say I'm not going to do that, I would be reprimanded. I would even be punished.
Right, right. Absolutely. Which sends a mixed message. Oh, my God.
Exactly.
And it, ooh, and I causes can't wait for this further. Event, Rita.
Yes, oh and God. I'm glad that you mentioned it. So, you know, we keep saying that there are so many layers of this, because it's like, because we don't talk about it, it's like you want to just, it's like, you know, you're regurgitating everything and you're just kind of like spitting everything
right.
out. And
right. it's like trying to get it all out.
I know, but it really, you know, it's one of these things where it deserves a part one, part two, part three, part
yes.
four.
Yes.
But yeah, so one of the initiatives, I guess, I mean, I would say that it's been a couple of years now that I've been doing it under, you know, the guise of different organizations, but mm-hmm. They, you know, the last 3 years, I've always held a Sexual Assault Awareness Month event. Our first one was on human trafficking, and you mm-hmm. had actually provided me a young woman that was yeah. able to speak and share her experience about being, mm-hmm. you know, I guess, brought into the world of sex trafficking at such a young age. And this happened like down the block from like our house, like on Church Avenue,
right.
as like
right.
a 13-year-old, you yeah. know, being brought in. And a lot of, and I remember when we actually had showed a video on how, you know, I think it was a video from Gems that uh-huh. talked about, you know, sex trafficking in New York City. And mm-hmm. I think it even mentioned how, like, you know, the average age is like, what, like 12, 13?
Yeah.
That young girls get brought into this. But, you know, we yeah. hear these stats and we hear about these things all the time. But to see somebody say, listen, I was just on Church Avenue.
Right.
And somebody picked me up.
Yes, absolutely.
It's crazy.
And a precursor for being trafficked is sexual abuse.
Exactly.
Because, you know, I mean, there's the level of trauma that you've experienced mm-hmm. and oh my gosh, like pimps, perpetrators, traffickers, they look for those signs,
yeah.
you know, young people who've been sexually abused, young people who are in systems and involved with systems, you know, young people who have unstable households. That's what they're looking for. That
and
is exactly what they're looking
it.
For. Cause right. And they don't have to break you too much because you're already broken.
Exactly.
Right.
It's like they smell it off of you. Like it doesn't
absolutely.
Even matter. And it's like, even if you came from like a quote, like you weren't in a system, but you were abused in the home. There's this like aura, I think, that you carry that
yes.
people who are, you know, victimizers can pick up mm-hmm. on, whether you
absolutely.
Know you're giving it out or not.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So that was our first event. And then the second year we, you know, actually had like a intimate like round table where we talked again about sexual abuse, and it was more general. And so it was a good experience because we actually had women, people I didn't even know, actually
okay.
share their experience of being abused as a child and, you know, how that has affected them as adults.
Wow.
And so that was really
wow.
powerful because, you know, people don't, these are not things that, you know, you tend to walk around and say, hey, let me give my story.
Right.
But it was very powerful. But this year, I, you know, again, with this R. Kelly business, it just, I just saw so much commentary in the media And on my social media, on Facebook, and all these other things, that I was like, we have to talk about it, because the things that I'm hearing are crazy, one.
Right.
And it just kind of like made me think, like, why is it that these issues come about and people are so interested in them when the media is involved? Like, if right. R. Kelly didn't happen, would we actually be having conversations about, you know, sexual abuse? Like, I have a track record for talking about it, but half of these, you know, I remember there was one organization that out of nowhere, they're like, oh, let's have a surviving R. Kelly event. And then you never hear anything again. Like, I haven't heard anything.
Exactly. Oh my God.
The forums have stopped.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's the hot thing to talk about. Meanwhile, it's happening every couple of seconds.
Exactly.
You know, to someone.
So this year, our event is called Surviving Your Loved One. So hashtag surviving and then your loved ones. And the focus is on sexual abuse, particularly childhood sexual abuse within the Black community. It's a topic that we do not address. We're afraid to open up the wounds. I mean, I'm not going to lie, as I'm preparing for this event, you know, you're waking up in cold sweats. You know, you're having flashbacks because I'm one of those individuals who have mastered the art of suppressing. Yeah. And, you know, now that it's like you're being confronted with this particular topic, things are starting to like pop back up where it's like, damn, I thought I forgot about that.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
And so I could only imagine, you know, what other people are thinking when, you know, they see that this event is happening. So the event is going to take place April 30th. So it's Tuesday, April 30th at the Brooklyn Commons, 495 Flatbush Avenue, Brooklyn, New York, second floor. You know, if you guys are following me on social media, according to RP, you know, on Instagram, you'll see the flyers. If you follow me on Frida's World, FREEDAS_world, the flyer is there as well too. And Audace, share your social media handle.
Yes. So my social media handle, I'm only on Instagram, Rita. You got me beat, girl. So my Instagram is Ascension. That's AUSCENSION underscore advocacy. So ADVOCACY. Ascension underscore advocacy.
Yeah, so I know Audace has put up the flyer as well too. So
yes.
And you know, if you guys have, I guess, questions about this event, you guys can also DM me on social media or send me an email at accordingtorp@gmail.com. But the event is going to be, you know, we're going to have a panel discussion. So we do have a panel of counselors, prosecutors, who will, you know, talk a little bit about the topic, and we'll have some directed pointed questions to kind of get the conversation going. And then it's going to end off in an open forum. So if people have questions or if people want to share, that'll be the opportunity for people to kind of share and engage. And I think what's particularly interesting about this event, we are going to have information about the new law. There's a new law that came out recently, really, that actually provides a way for victims to go after their abusers, even though it's been, you know, it could have been, I don't know, I don't remember what the actual period of time is or what the statute is, but it does allow for victims of abuse to, you know, still get a chance to seek justice at the hands, you know, or from the hands of their abusers. So I think that that's pretty interesting. You know, it's something that I think that there are people who, you know, want to still seek justice. I mean, after being abused by Uncle Charlie, you know, and you're seeing Uncle Charlie at dinner every year, you know, it's like that. Absolutely. That level of trauma is crazy.
It is. And we need to talk about the impact, Rita. Like, we need to talk about how, you know, you could, you know, have mental health, you know, concerns as a result, you know, experience PTSD, depression, anxiety. You know, people commit suicide as a result of, you know, withholding all of this stuff in, you know, suicidal ideation, substance abuse. It impacts your relationships with family, friends, romantic relationships, your employment, you know, stability with jobs and where you live. Like, there's so much. So we really need to talk about this because it's something that, you know, society doesn't talk about, and we have to start the conversation here.
Yeah, and it has to be something that we do, you know, outside of the Sexual Assault Awareness Month.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
The month gives us a platform to talk about these things, you know, to bring it up. But there has to be, you know, a ongoing conversation, because just from this show, there's so many different things that we've touched on, but we couldn't go in depth in.
Yes.
Because one, we don't have that much time to do all of that,
mm-hmm.
but it just, you know, it's just like, it's crazy. We start talking about one thing and then it's like, man, but what about this aspect? So
yes.
it's something that we are going to have to break down into pieces and really, you know, address. And I think, you know, before anything else, therapy, you know, I know you're obviously a big proponent of therapy,
yes.
especially with the work that you do. But mm-hmm. therapy is definitely something that's very essential to healing from you know, your past trauma. But mm-hmm. I also think that, you know, again, having these types of forums and group discussions are helpful as well, too, because you can sit with your therapist and work through all your issues, and that's recommended. But
right.
knowing that that there are other women, other men, other people who look like you, who have the same maybe, you know, professional makeup as you, that are actually going through the same types of, you know,
yes.
you know, mm-hmm. issues, you know, they wake up in cold sweats too. This has been haunting
right.
them as well. They're having mm-hmm. issues keeping a stable relationship. It speaks volumes when you're able to connect with somebody else who has, you know, that, I guess, that shared experience, that shared traumatic
yes.
experience. So
right.
that's why, because I wanted to bring that up, because I know there are some people who were like, oh, this, you know, this event is very, very heavy. People aren't going to want to talk. This is something for therapy. And yes, it is something for therapy. But as mm-hmm. a community, we need to talk with each other. We need to heal together in order to move forward.
Absolutely. Definitely. Because people are walking around, you know, and suffering in silence and feeling like they're the only one that has had this experience. So it's really important that we do have this conversation. And if people don't speak out on that day, maybe it'll encourage them to speak out, you know, down the line sometime.
Yeah.
Whatever that seed is that's going to be planted on that day, let it, you know, be watered and let it flourish wherever it flourishes. But we need to end this silence now. So
yeah, we do, or else our kids are screwed.
Yeah, they are. Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, I know, it's like, oh, we want to talk some more about this. But we have to leave something for the event.
Yes, yes.
But yes,
let's end it now and move on.
Yes, we will move on. Mm-hmm. But definitely, you know, follow us on social media to get updates about the event. Again, it's April 30th. It's Tuesday, April 30th at the Brooklyn Commons, 495 Flatbush Avenue, Brooklyn, New York, 11225. And it's between the hours of 6:30 p.m. and 8:30 p.m., you know, whether you want to share or not, this is not like necessarily, you know, you have to speak and give your presence there doesn't even indicate that you are a victim, were a victim. Like, you know, it's just a platform to get more information, because it might not be you who needs the information, but you might have a loved one or, you know, or even an acquaintance that mm-hmm. may need this, but you know, may need this information. So we definitely encourage the community to come out and support this effort. And again, Audace, as always, thank you so much for just being the advocate that you are. Audace,
thank you,
an amazing advocate. I got to see her at work firsthand at the DA's office, and I've been fortunate enough to, you know, continue the friendship over these
yes.
years and just the work relationship over these years. But I definitely
yes.
commend you for your work in the community as well, because it's not easy.
It sure isn't. And I commend you for, you know, using your platform, you know, to have these conversations. Like, you could be talking about, I don't know, what other kind of law could you be talking about? You could be talking about so many other things,
we
you know,
could be,
with your platform.
And
you know,
we do,
but
though.
You get to talk about community and,
yeah.
and building community. So thank you so much.
No, of course. Of
thank
course.
Thank you.
So with that being said, everyone, it is a wrap for this episode of According to RP. We again are waiting for you guys at the event. Those of you who are in the New York City area, we are waiting for you on the 30th of April. Audace will be there. If you have any
yes.
questions for her, if you're interested in knowing more about her LLC, Ascension Advocacy, definitely show up, ask questions. You know, we're here to assist. We're, you know, for me, I'm by no means like, you know, a licensed professional therapist, but I am a student of life.
Yes.
And that counts as a lot.
Yes, so. It does. Absolutely. Yes,
all
it
right,
does,
everyone.
Rita.
So
thank you.
Thank you so much, Audace. And
okay.
That's a wrap.
Awesome. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You were listening to According to RP on WJMS Radio.
About time you tuned in.
Tune in each and every Thursday.
I can't wait to come back.
7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
It's all online.
WJMSradio.com.
Download the new app.
Live 365. Listen to the show anywhere.
Anytime.
Download it now.
Thank you.